Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly call. Today is May 13th, 2024. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. Eastern. If you're listening live over Rumble, YouTube, or another network, and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, you can go to nationallibertyalliance.org and click on our weekly call for instructions to join us by phone, app, or browser. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions, that's plural, questions at nationallibertyalliance.org. Please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save our republic. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab on the top right side of our website. Okay, we're going to pick up where we left off last week with our scripture reading. We're in the Gospel of John, chapter 16. So we're going to be looking at the Gospel of John, chapter 16, read by Alexander Scorby.
Chapter 16. These things have I spoken unto you, that ye should not be offended. They shall put you out of the synagogues. Yea, the time cometh that whosoever killeth you will think that he doeth God service. And these things will they do unto you because they have not known the Father, nor me. But these things have I told you, that when the time shall come, ye may remember that I told you of them. And these things I said not unto you at the beginning, because I was with you. But now I go my way to him that sent me. And none of you asketh me, Whither goest thou? But because I have said these things unto you, sorrow hath filled your heart. Nevertheless, I tell you the truth. It is expedient for you that I go away. For if I go not away, the Comforter will not come unto you. But if I depart, I will send him unto you. And when he is come, he will reprove the world of sin, and of righteousness, and of judgment. Of sin, because they believe not on me. Of righteousness, because I go to my Father, and ye see me no more. Of judgment, because the prince of this world is judged. I have yet many things to say unto you, but ye cannot bear them now. Howbeit, when he, the Spirit of truth, is come, he will guide you into all truth. For he shall not speak of himself, but whatsoever he shall hear, that shall he speak, and he will show you things to come. He shall glorify me, for he shall receive of mine, and shall show it unto you. All things that the Father hath are mine. Therefore said I, that he shall take of mine, and shall show it unto you. A little while, and ye shall not see me. And again a little while, and ye shall see me, because I go to the Father. Then said some of his disciples among themselves, What is this that he saith unto us, A little while, and ye shall not see me, and again a little while, and ye shall see me, and because I go to the Father? They said therefore, What is this that he saith, A little while? We cannot tell what he saith. Now Jesus knew that they were desirous to ask him, and said unto them, Do ye inquire among yourselves of that I said, A little while, and ye shall not see me, and again a little while, and ye shall see me? Verily, verily, I say unto you, that ye shall weep and lament, but the world shall rejoice, and ye shall be sorrowful, but your sorrow shall be turned into joy. A woman, when she is in travail, hath sorrow, because her hour is come. But as soon as she is delivered of the child, she remembereth no more the anguish, for joy that a man is born into the world. And ye now therefore have sorrow, but I will see you again. And your heart shall rejoice, and your joy no man taketh from you. And in that day ye shall ask me nothing. Verily, verily, I say unto you, whatsoever ye shall ask the Father in my name, he will give it you. Hitherto have ye asked nothing in my name. Ask, and ye shall receive, that your joy may be full. These things have I spoken unto you in Proverbs, but the time cometh when I shall no more speak unto you in Proverbs, but I shall show you plainly of the Father. At that day ye shall ask in my name, and I say not unto you that I will pray the Father for you, for the Father himself loveth you, because ye have loved me, and have believed that I came out from God. I came forth from the Father, and am come into the world. Again I leave the world, and go to the Father. His disciples said unto him, Lo, now speakest thou plainly, and speakest no proverb. Now are we sure that thou knowest all things, and needest not that any man should ask thee. By this we believe that thou camest forth from God. Jesus answered them, Do ye now believe? Behold, the hour cometh, yea, is now come, that ye shall be scattered every man to his own, and shall leave me alone. And yet I am not alone, because the Father is with me. These things I have spoken unto you, that in me ye might have peace. In the world ye shall have tribulation. But be of good cheer. I have overcome the world.
Okay, Terry, do we have any questions or announcements?
John, I forgot all about it. If Jan worked with me, I didn't get the message, or I forgot the message. Too much going on.
You're not aware of anything.
I'm sorry?
You're not aware of any questions?
No, I'm not aware of any questions.
All right, we'll forego that then this week, and I guess we'll pick up if there's anything double up next week. I do have one thing I want to kind of cover, spend maybe about, I don't know, 7, 8, maybe 10 minutes at the most on. I don't know if people are aware of this, but there was a solar flare, pretty bold one over the weekend. I think it was a Category 3 or Category 4, and it did disrupt some things, nothing major, mostly I guess communications through satellites, that kind of thing. I don't know if there's been any destruction. I haven't heard of anything in the United States. But again, it wasn't a really bold one. But let me just play a little bit of the report of what's coming on. It's only about, I don't know, 6 minutes or so. Let me see. Pick it up at the 4.3 mark. Yeah, it's about 4 minutes. So we'll play this. Make sure, let me know if you're not hearing this, Terry or Eric, let me know.
I see it, and I'll hear it.
Advancements in space technology, particularly with satellites like NOAA's GOES series, have significantly enhanced our ability to monitor and predict solar activity. These satellites are equipped with sensitive instruments capable of detecting even the slightest changes in solar energy output, which provides real-time alerts for solar flares and CMEs. As we approach the peak of solar cycle 25, it's important to understand the levels of the geomagnetic storms, as current observations and models suggest that solar cycle 25 could be one of the most active in decades. The NOAA space weather scales classify these storms into different levels, ranging from G1, minor, to G5, extreme. Each level corresponds to potential effects, such as disruptions to power grids and communication systems at higher intensities. The first level is the G1, minor level, where weak power grid fluctuations can occur, and minor impacts on satellite operations are possible. The most enchanting effect, however, is the increased likelihood of auroras near the polar regions, which may be visible at higher latitudes than usual. Moving to G2, moderate, to G3, strong levels, storms can lead to high-latitude power systems being affected, with potential transformer damage. The auroras become more widespread, occasionally visible down to mid-latitude regions. Finally, from G4, severe, to G5, extreme levels, storms are the strongest, which can induce widespread voltage control problems and protective system problems, potentially leading to extended power outages. Auroras may be seen as far south as Florida or southern Europe. These intense storms are rare, but can significantly disrupt modern life. So, the auroras, while beautiful, signify disturbances in the Earth's magnetosphere caused by these solar storms. Several tools and websites offer aurora forecasts and alerts. For example, NOAA provides forecasts about geomagnetic activity, which can help predict when and where auroras might be visible. Additionally, there are apps and websites dedicated to aurora predictions that take into account current solar activity and geomagnetic data to provide real-time or near-real-time forecasts. Understanding the varied impacts of these geomagnetic storm levels helps in preparing appropriate responses. For instance, power companies might enhance grid resilience against potential fluctuations and surges during higher storm warnings. Wildlife conservation groups can monitor as well. Also, engineers and scientists have made significant strides in enhancing the resilience of satellites and power grids against solar storms. Looking forward, the integration of artificial intelligence, AI, and machine learning into solar storm prediction models shows great potential for improving forecast accuracy. As a result, we're better equipped to prepare for and mitigate the impact of space weather on our critical infrastructure.
Okay, make sure I'm unmuted. All right, as I mentioned, there was a solar storm over the weekend. There's been, again, some outages, but nothing major. And I think it was a Category 3. 4 becomes a problem. 5 is a real serious problem. We've spoken about this before, so I'm not going to really speak too much about it tonight. But I do want to just make the note so that people are aware of this. I mean, we know that we have our infrastructure has been protected. Trump did that when he was in office. Our satellites are protected. I know that if satellites are going up, I know Musk lost about 10 satellites, I think it was last year, 20 satellites last year, because they were launched up and they didn't reach their position and set up quick enough when the solar flare had come through, and so we lost them. So they are kind of destructive, and a major solar flare will just take out your car, destroy the electronics and computers, also generators, and the entire electric within your home. Totally destroyed if we get hit with the 5. Like I said, our infrastructure is protected. Military is protected, and our satellites are protected, but our homes and our cars are not. So, I know for myself, I found this a while back when I was looking to figure out how to protect my home and my generator and my car. I found this information, and we put a page up right here. You can click on this on the right-hand side of the website, and again, people can watch these videos on their own and find out all the information about it and how you may go about protecting your home with an EMP shield. Like I said, I've got one in my car, got one in my generator, and I have one in my home. Anything plugged in your home, any electronics, computers, whatever, if it's plugged in and your home is protected with an EMP shield, it protects everything that's within your home, electrically speaking. All right, with that, we're going to move on. I wanted to talk a little bit more about some things going on with traffic ticket, but I haven't had time to really put some things together. There's been some communications back and forth, so maybe next week I'll have the time and I'll share some information and post some information. I think we've done a thing on traffic court maybe about 4 weeks ago or so, and maybe 2 weeks ago, roughly speaking, we did an update, but I got another update that, I'll try to get to it next week. Okay, with that, we got the Q&A open. If anybody wants to get into the queue, it's a *6-1 if you're on a phone, and if you've got an app or a browser, there should be a button to be able to enter into the queue. Right now, we only got one person in the queue. So, again, if anybody's got anything, *6-1 or click the button. Okay, we'll take our first person in there. Looks like someone named Jack. Let me unmute you. What state are you from, Jack? And what's your question?
Hi, can you hear me?
Okay, you don't sound like Jack, but we can hear you. What's your first name and your state? Go ahead.
It's Jackie.
Oh, it's Jackie. Okay.
Yeah, Jackie Lyon. I've been on your site for days and days taking your courses and so on.
Okay.
And
go ahead.
I had an injury on the Hilton properties in February, and I severely hurt my shoulder. In fact, they had to do a shoulder replacement. And Hilton does not want to compensate me for any of my expenses. And I am wondering, what court would I go to? It happened in Florida, only I live in Wisconsin.
Well, you'd want to go to the state court. I don't think you want to go to a county court. You want to go to some state. You're in Florida, you say?
Yeah, the incident happened in Florida.
Uh-huh. Yeah, you'd want to go to the state court in Florida then, if you could. And what, did you move from Florida?
No, we were just there for on vacation.
Okay. All right, well, anyway, state court would be the proper venue to go to.
And I'm wondering, should I... But they sent me an offer. It's one of these timeshare things, and they wanted to give me 5,000 of their timeshare points, which is equivalent to like 1 week in one of their resorts. And I haven't answered them. And I'm wondering, should I present a counter offer, or should I just sue them?
Well, again, I don't really understand what's going on. I don't understand the situation. You're saying that you actually had some kind of a problem. What was the main thing that happened? Was it an injury?
Well, I was in their kitchen. The kitchen had no artificial lighting, and the lights were off. The light switch was hard to reach, and the dishwasher door was open. I fell over the door. And I broke my arm and completely smashed my rotator cuff. They had to give me a complete shoulder replacement and so on.
It doesn't sound like something that you'd be able to sue anybody with. It sounds like a situation that you could have prevented. At least that's what it sounds like. If they're offering you something, you might want to take it. But I guess that would be a nice thing just to try to offer you something. But I don't see them as being liable in that situation.
Yeah. Yeah, we talked to a doctor. He's in Tampa, Florida, and he developed a alarm that goes on a dishwasher door, because people are falling over these doors all the time. And they're getting hurt. They're going to the emergency room. And nobody hardly knows about this. It's not being reported. So
this is a situation where you were using a dishwasher, or somebody was using a dishwasher. They left the door open, and then you came in the dark and fell on it, correct?
Right.
Yeah. I don't see liability by anybody.
Okay. Well, I've asked a number of attorneys to take my case, and I guess they don't either. So.
Yeah, I don't see anything, yeah. But I'll tell you, if they're being nice and they offered you something, take it. Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Okay, well, bye.
Thank you. All right, again, we have one other person in the queue. Queue's empty. Anybody got a question or a comment or a correction? Now's the time. Got the mic there. Get into the queue. Star 6 and 1 if you're on the phone. Go ahead.
Hello.
Lisa.
Hi. Yes.
What state you from?
Florida.
Florida. How you doing, Lisa? Elisa, right?
Yeah. You can call me Lisa.
Lisa. Okay.
Yeah.
Go right ahead.
I spoke to you once before. I figured I'd just ask a question that I've been thinking about now since you had openings. I'm here in Florida, and I went through a divorce a couple years ago. I wanted to change my name back to my birth surname. When I went to the DMV, all they could tell me was I'm blocked, and they told me to call Iowa. In 1993, I attended school in Iowa, and apparently I caught a speeding and a seatbelt ticket that I don't even remember back in 1993. It's a long time ago. So I called them up and they wanted me to pay for the two tickets. They were cheap at that time and they kept the price. Because the judge, you know, I wasn't present. I moved around. I didn't know I had a ticket out there. And they couldn't find me. So the judge said I was guilty and it went against my record.
Yeah, everybody's guilty in those courts.
The court clerk said, well, why don't you just pay it? It's only like $50. And so I went to my insurance company, you know, my auto insurance. And before I paid it, I said, well, how do I know you're not going to raise my insurance? Because I'm on a fixed income. And they couldn't guarantee that. They said, well, it's 1993. We probably won't. I said, basically, you probably will. So yeah. I haven't done anything about it.
Did you ask the court what's going to happen? I mean, this is a very old ticket. It's ridiculous. I mean, statute of limitations have already passed to begin with. But they don't care anyway. They're just there to take your money. Everybody's guilty.
Right. The clerk wouldn't even listen to me. She said, you are guilty. I said, how could I be guilty if I never showed up? She said, Well, the judge makes that decision. I later found out after speaking to an attorney in Iowa that did traffic, said the courts in Iowa and Des Moines are pretty bad. They're pretty tough. And it went to the DOT. She said, so it's not even part of this anymore. I don't really know what she meant by that, but she couldn't help me.
Mm-hmm. Well, you said it was a speeding ticket or something?
A speeding ticket and a no seatbelt.
Right. Well, are you still going to court or what?
No, I just never changed my name back because apparently the connection hasn't been made to a married name. This was in my maiden name that it happened.
Gotcha.
I swear I don't remember, but it might have happened, but that was a long time ago.
Well, do you have any plans to go back and talk to that judge in that court or no?
Oh, God, no. I believe the judge is still there, but according to the attorney, she looked it up, didn't charge me anything, wanted to charge me something. If I wanted to pursue it, it would have been expensive, and said I probably wouldn't get anywhere anyway, but it went to the DOT, she said. So there's really not much anybody can do. And furthermore, they're probably not going to do anything.
Well, worst case scenario, if you wanted to pay it and just get rid of it, I mean, you could also challenge it and fight it, but you'd have to have knowledge of that. I think you said you're just starting to take some of the, I think you said you're starting to take courses or no?
Yeah, I'm going to start. I just got my money
in. You know, there's a couple of things you could do. First of all, you can make the plea as guilty for right now if you want to. For $50, it's not a big deal. It's not going to go on anyone's ticket, on anybody's license, because you don't have one in your name no more. And I think by the time you then maybe turn around and do things to move over back to that name, they're not going to be able to apply anything other than against a number that would be an old license. I presume you had a license at that time with your your birth name, and then when you changed it, you changed the name on your driver's license. Is that what you did?
Yeah, but it must have been a national thing because I've always had this name. I moved here in 2020, so I've been in New York, California, and North Carolina since I graduated in 1996. This happened in 93 while I was in school in Iowa.
Yeah, but my point is this, is if you paid the ticket, it would disappear. And then if you're in a different state now and you go to change your name over on your license, I don't think it would show up. So I don't think you'd have the problem that you think you might be having, because I don't see that there'd be a connection to that.
Well, wouldn't there be if it's back into the original maiden name? That's where the problem is.
They have no place to apply it. They'd have to have an old number. And again, do you think that your ID number is the same with your maiden name as it is with your marriage name?
Well, if I go to change my name in Florida, they're going to bring up something from Iowa again, because that's how this all started.
Oh, okay, I got you. All right, well, you know, again, maybe you want to fight it first. There's a couple of things you could do. You can try to make a plea, make an agreement with the court that you'd plead guilty as long as there are no points, because this thing is so old. Other than that, you're not going to plead guilty and pay the fine. The other thing you could do is learn how to take care of your business and challenge the jurisdiction, because they don't have jurisdiction over you anyway. You know, we just recently taught about that about 3-4 weeks ago. You can go and watch the video. Let me see, if you look under on our website, come under, where is it at? I think it's Today's Issues. Today's Issues. Click on NLA Monday Open Forum Videos. And let's see, last week or 2 weeks ago, we did traffic court follow-up. Let me just double-check that. Yeah, 2 weeks ago. So we did a follow-up on traffic court. So you'd want to go back a little further. And you want to come to the Monday Night Open Forum for April 8th, 2024. How to take back the schools, villages, towns, and counties. Well, no, that may not be it. Oh, yes, it's before that. April 1st, 2024. Town, village, traffic, and administrative courts. So if you watch that, you'll get a lot of information. We also offered some pages when you go through that you can, you know, see some cases that, a case that I had done and what I'm doing to deal with traffic court. And there's a process. They'll try everything they can to keep you. These people just are insane. But, you know, again, and again, I did the follow-up on this particular one just 2 weeks ago, and that would be April 29th. Next week, I'm going to do another follow-up, because this has been like an ongoing saga. So,
oh, I have another question. If I do pay this, mm-hmm. because I'm old and I have medical issues, it's going to be tough to start a fight with them. Mm-hmm. If I pay it and my auto insurance decides to raise me, can I challenge the auto insurance?
Well, look, you know, what these people want is your money.
Oh, yeah.
That's what they want, okay? Now, let me see again. You're living in Florida now. Is that the case?
Correct.
And the ticket was where? What state again?
Iowa in 1993.
Okay. You could write a letter to the court and explain the situation. You just found out that you had a ticket. Don't tell them how you found out, but just you found out that you had a ticket way back when. And you're considering taking care of that business and paying the ticket, but you want to you could plead not guilty. I doubt that I doubt the cop's going to come in. You can tell them you're not there anymore. You know, you have to do this on the phone or something. But I look, they really just want your money. They don't care about anything else. They just want your money. So if you could work a deal out with them and say, hey, look, years ago, so on and so forth, I'll give you the $50, but I want to make sure I'm not going to get any points. So can it be reduced to something, and what is it going to be reduced to? And see what happens, see where it goes. You could probably do that on the phone.
Okay.
But, you know, if you can get a hold of the judge on the phone, I mean, those town judges, you usually can if you call during the day. But if not, you can call the clerk, and the clerk will tell you where to, you can send a letter just basically saying that kind of a situation. So $50, you know, it's not that big a deal, but you're right. You don't want your insurance to go up.
And what if they say no?
Well, hang up.
Okay.
Hang up. Well, first, you know, you don't live there anymore, so it's a problem. I mean, look, you got to make a plea then. And if you plead guilty, if you plead innocent, and you go, then you got to go to court. And if you go to court and the cop doesn't show up, then the case needs to be dismissed. That's the only time they dismiss cases. And a lot of times they won't tell you that. If the people are ignorant and don't realize that, hey, the cop didn't show, we'll reschedule you for next month. Excuse me? No. I'm here. He's not here. You guys lose, because that's the process in their courts.
Probably retired by now.
Yeah, probably.
Well, John, wouldn't they have to prove that she is the same person?
Well, again, good question. They really don't care. Like I said, they just want her money. That's all they want. I'm having a battle with the traffic court. I've never had such a battle as I'm having right now. Going back and forth, I moved it into the state court. State court is trying to throw it out because they're working things out with the town court, and they're doing illegal things, so I got a battle going on back and forth. It gets back to the same thing. They want your money. That's all they want.
Yeah. Hey, did you get a chance to look at that PDF book I sent you?
Which book was that?
The anti-government book.
You know, I think I've seen that book before. I know someone said, when did you send it to me? Because someone did send something like that. And
I think it was like 3 weeks ago.
Okay. Yeah, I remember seeing it, so I probably just breezed through it, but I had seen that before. That's been around for quite some time.
Yeah, it's a 1999 book, but it's four judges, from judges for judges. And
right.
It's very condescending to us, you know, to the people, and we are the anti-government they're speaking of in the title.
Well, absolutely, yes. It's all the people against them, or them against us. You know?
Yes. Yeah, you said something about maybe you could use it in a federal case or something.
Yeah.
It's a good little book.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember seeing it. Like I said, I haven't read through it, but I had seen it before. But there is a lot of information in there that could be helpful to understand how they're thinking.
Yeah, they're really talking against, you know, common law, and they don't really, they talk against it as, you know, like condescending to us. And really what they're condescending is just common law, really. And they never really give any answers. They just tell them how to skirt around things.
Mm-hmm. Well, again, they're not interested in the law at all. They got their own law, and even their own law, when you try to use their law against them, they still do other things. They just don't even obey their own law. So.
Well, Arizona, you know, Maricopa County seems to be getting somewhere with their people in common law. They're pretty organized over there. There's a couple of videos out on them.
Mm-hmm. All right. Any other questions?
Nope. That's it. Have a nice night. I'll be listening and hopefully won't fall asleep. I fall asleep. It's past my bedtime, but I try, and then I just try and pick up on the recording.
Yeah. Yeah, and I've been posting videos now so that people can watch the videos for those coming in on phones and sharing a desktop and sharing information on the web and particularly our website and so on. But anyway, okay.
All right. Thank you.
So we'll take our next caller. And we got one other caller in again. Nobody in the queue, so if anybody wants to get into the queue, star 6 and a 1. Only got one person left right at the moment, Marianne from Indiana. You got the mic. Go right ahead.
Listening.
There you are.
Yes, I'm here.
All right, you got the mic. Go right ahead.
Hi. I just wanted to bring up, I know I've mentioned this economic development stuff in the past, and just wanted to let you know and let everybody who's in a county, you know, group know that this is quite organized. It has a structure, and it's very well funded, economic development stuff. It's actually the funds that they're using for economic development, which I do believe is more Marxist destruction. And with, if you think of ment equals means mind in Latin, this is it's quite embedded in every county and local, even local governments. And just IEDConline.org is what I'm finding at the top, and it's in Washington. And it boasts that it started in 1926 and is a very strong lobby for economic development. If you go to the IEDConline.org, and you scroll down to public.
What's the website again?
IEDConline.org. Yeah.
Okay.
And
if you scroll down to the bottom and you go to public policy, you see it all the way at the bottom there.
All the way?
By the way, I'm finding that on all these websites I go to. I scroll down to the bottom. But look how it's funded. Amazon, DCI, if you go up a little bit, you see how it's very well, how that's grant true. Works. It's all about like grants. And Placer.ai is a location.
What exactly does the International Economic Development do?
It's basically a lobby firm, a lobby company for economic development, which is linked to the UN and World Economic Forum. And if you go down to the bottom, you go to public policy. See the public policy on the right. And there's all sorts of stuff about, like, FEMA. If you look at the download presentation, you go up a little bit, you see the... No, up. American, the ARP, ARPA. See the download presentation under ARPA? American Response Plan Act?
Under one of these tabs?
No, it's right in front of you.
Say that again?
It's right in front of you on the page. If you go down a little bit.
The American Rescue Plan Act, this way, download
right.
Presentation.
Right, that's ARPA. I found, I saw that they were, somebody was into the whole green stuff, was boasting about they had $1.9 trillion funding from Biden, and I was like, what in the world? So this is what it is. The ARPA, this was presented, obviously, Friday, April 2nd, 2021, but if you scroll down a bit, keep going to the next pages. That was the old CEO of it. And
Agenda 21?
This is basically just very well-funded Agenda 21. So if you go up, you see how it breaks down the $1.9 trillion. And most of it is going to this economic development within the states.
I'm familiar with the connection with the Agenda 21 and the United Nations and the funding, which is foreign monies. That right there is illegal to begin with.
Well, this is not foreign money. There is an infrastructure in the United States that's intended to be there. It's there no matter who's in office. Whether or not the World Economic Forum is in place or what, but it's a self-functioning organization that is intent on destroying the United States. It's very obvious, and they're in every locality. I mean, they're everywhere. And like I said, it's very well structured, and look at how they're involved in the funding piece of it. They're non-governmental organizations that are teamed up with .govs, and what they do is they use the NGOs to hide information and hide from FOIA, because they don't have to respond to FOIA requests because they're private, right? So they tend to, so our .govs hide a lot of their actions through .coms and .orgs. And this is an indication. Look at that. Like, it has the $1,400 in direct payments that go to us. But if you go down another page, because you're talking about NOAA, look at that. Commerce-wide budget, so $3 billion. So you go up $3 billion in ARPA on top of $1.5 billion from CARES. So it's using both the CARES fund as well as the ARPA funds to basically do whatever they want. Regular annual appropriations, EDA, EDA is a .gov, and this is part of the Commerce Department. So it's part of the Commerce Department. NOAA is part of Commerce Department. NOAA does all sorts of research, and you know they're involved in weather manipulation. And but what else is really interesting is I looked up NOAA to see if they had any collaboration, because, you know, the Department of Energy with the direct energy weapons is kind of scary. But they're teamed up. There is actually a collaboration between NOAA and the Department of Education, Department of Energy, that is at Oak Ridge. And so they have a, I think it's been going on for 6 years. I think they just signed a new agreement to continue to collaborate. And also NOAA creates products, and it even says on their site, under their research and development arm, under on NOAA, is with a totally separate website for NOAA, and that talks about accelerated development together with they talk about selling their products. It's like, what are they selling, and to whom, what NGOs are they selling these to, their products. So they're selling products out to, like, the highest bidder, obviously. And so they're also working with Department of Energy. And I do believe that's part of the collaboration that's somehow bringing about all this crazy weather and tornadoes and taking out, like, Lahaina. There was a community, there was an economic development plan for Lahaina out of Maui. There's an economic development plan for Sulphur, Oklahoma, that got totally wiped out. So it's just, it's planned. It's all planned.
Right.
And it's
this is money coming in through foreign interests, and ultimately it's really the construction of corporatism on its lowest level right next to us. I mean, corporatism ultimately is Nazism. It's the same thing. You can put any ism you want in on it, but it's generally Nazism. And they've corporatized everything. They've incorporated the United States of America. They've incorporated every state. They've incorporated just about every county. I heard that there's a few counties that haven't incorporated, but I don't know if that's true or not, but that's what I've heard. But generally speaking, they've incorporated that. They've incorporated the people in the sense that they deal with us as a corporation. We come in with our all cap names, and we deal with the IRS and all that stuff and all that craziness. But again, the United Nations is all behind it. It is unlawful. All this is going to be dismantled and done away with once devolution plays out. And at that point, we take our nation back. I know we're preparing for that here at National Liberty Alliance. I've been talking with an individual who's connected with numerous other groups, some groups that we've been trying to connect with. And they're looking at trying to also do something and potentially working with us where we're going to try to bring our courts back by going into the federal courts and doing sort of an indictment on the federal judiciary. We've already kind of made that point to them already, but we need to go in and indict the entire federal judiciary. Which is a strange thing to do, but it can be done. I think we've worked out a way to do it. And that's going to be taking us right down to all the states. So we're looking to put all of the states between now and then on notice, all of the judiciaries in every one of the states on notice through a petition, which they're going to ignore. And that's okay, because we're just looking for evidence, and they should respond to the petition that we, the people, will be putting in concerning what's going on in the courts. So all of the complaints that go unanswered and ignored, nobody does anything. People are thrown out of the courts left and right. So anyway, we're going to be working on trying to bring the courts of justice back as quick as possible once devolution plays out. So that's we're focusing in on that right now. But this is all part of corporatism. And, you know, thank God we're at a point where it's all going to be dismantled soon.
But that $1.9 trillion is our taxpayer money going out to this.
Well, that's true. But bear in mind, when we go out after the powers that be, the elite, so to speak, you know, as Trump has said many times, when you rob a diamond store and you get caught, you got to give the diamonds back. Well, hey, they got to give everything back, everything that they own, which is trillions and trillions and trillions and who knows how many trillions of dollars worth of value with corporations, major corporations, properties, gold, silver, liquidity. I mean, all the things that they have will be taken away from them. And where's it going to go? It's got to go back to the people. So we'll be compensated. We're all, you know, been injured, every one of us. And for every injury in the common law, there must be a remedy. And so if there's an ability to have a remedy, and there is, because there's a lots of money out there that these people have that have been stealing from us, the debt has nothing to do with us. That's their problem. You know, they've been renting their money out to us and just charging it, and it's monopoly money. So it doesn't mean anything. It is.
But I also want to emphasize that I'm here in my county, in Jasper County in Indiana. It's an agricultural, traditionally, historically agricultural, and it is totally being decimated. Like, it's just, they're, like, the farmers are just being really, really heavily pressured financially to sell their farms, rezone them to commercial or multi-use. There's allegedly an industrial park down the road that is all farmland. You know, it's just all the stuff is being sold through, and there's an IEDCINGOV here in Indiana, and it's just really coincidental that there's an IEDC online and there's an IEDC in Gov. And it's here in Indiana.
A lot of those corporations that have really been putting everybody out of business and then building these great large corporations and funding, you know, and farming and doing all these different things, I got to believe it's got to go back to the people also. I mean, at some point, you know, cause all of it was a fraud, all of it was pressure to put, you know, the common person, the regular person who's just doing business, owning a farm, doing whatever it is that they're, to make a living, they've taken it away from us at every level. It's not just the food industry, it's in everything. You know, they have, we're being destroyed by monopolies, and that's what's going on. And there may be, like, take a look at, for instance, Lowe's and Home Depot. I think the both of them are about, in order to try to get around.
I just want to emphasize, you can call them out at the local level. A lot of this is, a lot of these state organizations, a lot of it is money laundering. And you're here in the IEDC, .in.gov has attached to it an International Economic Development Foundation that is a 501c3, which is a red flag right away. It also is not required by the IRS to file any 990s. So since its inception in 2005, it's not filed a single 990. They keep their donors. They are redacted. When I demanded the list, they sent me a list, and it was 90% redacted names on it, 75% to 90%. So it's very shady, but I do believe that the bribery and money laundering piece will probably be what brings it down in this infrastructure that they've built. And also, if anybody wanted to go back to the IEDConline.org, you'll see they're teaching all about DEI and really pushing all that stuff. And since they're a lobbying group, and they consider themselves to be very powerful, they're pushing all this, and it's really disgusting, and it just needs to go. But the thing is that they're so deceptive that people don't even notice it. They'll be at these meetings, and they're wondering why they're at their county commissioners meeting, wondering, like, what in the world is going on? Like, why are all these solar farms going in, you know, who are these engineers? You got APA, you got economic development, who the person's just kind of sitting there watching everything play out, and it's just disgusting, and money's flowing to it, and
they've been working to take over the United States for quite some time, and the time for them to complete their deed is mm-hmm. this year, and yep. They're being forced into a corner, and they're accelerating. Trump has really caused them to fall back quite a bit and put a lot of roadblocks up. So now people are seeing, lots of people are seeing, the conspiracy people, so to speak, whatever they call us, conspiracy, goodness, what's the word that they use?
Conspiracy theorists.
Theory. I mean, it isn't a theory after all. The conspiracy is real, and it's not a theory. And that's true with a lot of things. But look, we're very close to being taken down, but we're also very close to turning things around, because they're being revealed. You know, they've been operating covertly, and now they've been revealed, so they're overt. And people are seeing, the regular people that aren't even paying attention are starting to see it and starting to get disgusted. But it's going to be a major, major, major change once this happens. Because remember, we're not a democracy. Democracy has to go. Two-party system has to go. They can't stay, because no Republican can withstand a democracy, or two parties or three parties or anything making an argument. There's nothing to debate. There's nothing to argue. We've already set the stage. We've already set the law. We've already given them the marching orders. We've already told them what they could do and what they can't do. It's called the Constitution. And we've listed their powers, the authority and the power of the legislators, the authority and the power of the administration, the authority and the power of the judicial powers. We've listed it. We've laid it out. We've just nothing to talk about. So what do? They always talk and debate and arguing things that are illegal. That's where they're wasting their time. That's why the two-party system was created. It's a back-and-forth, right-left thing, join the party. And they never get any real work done, because the parties prevent that from happening. People need to be going in as representatives of ours, particularly in the legislature, and they need to go in and think about the people and make their votes accordingly. But they need to only vote about according to the 19 powers that we've given them. Can't go beyond that. And that's true in the states too. Nothing has changed. But they've totally destroyed our courts. Court system is gone. There is no justice in our courts. It's totally 100% corrupt at every single level, from the highest federal level all the way down to the village courts. Total corruption. It's all about money. It's all about throwing you out of the court if you're coming in against the status quo. It's all about just putting people in jail, making money there too. They make money constantly. Mm-hmm. Hey, Gerard, I see you're coming in on two different ways. Are you able to talk here? Gerard? Do I have to unmute you or something? Let me try unmuting you there.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you. What's up? You can't talk on the other one?
Yeah, I got a problem, so I'm on the phone on this one and the computer on the other one. I just wanted to say real quick that all these NGOs and all this corporatism and all that, that's going away worldwide. They're all dying. And anything they think they're going to do, or any plans that they have, they're already dead. They're already taking their leaders out, because they're all bankrupt. This fractional reserve banking system is falling on its face. And when you have a bankrupt corporation, I don't care what job it's doing, it has no authority. And that's how they're going to kill it. It will have no authority to do anything. And that's what Trump's plan is. That's what the military's plan is. And the other part of the plan is anything that needs to be funded, it's very easy to get rid of it by not signing the papers to fund it, and it dries up and goes away. Those people will not work very long if they're not getting paid. So I do believe the big part of the plan is to get rid of this stuff globally. We don't even, we're worried about a lot of stuff. Their plans, very grandiose and all that, but they've already failed. They've already, because people are not accepting it. They didn't meet the goals that they thought they were going to meet. They didn't kill as many people as they thought they were going to kill. You know, we do have some tough ties because they're going to reintroduce another scandemic. And if we cooperate, it will then woe to us. But if we stand our grounds, they will not make any. This is their last blowout now, this year. And it's going to become very clear by election time. I don't believe you're going to have a regular election. I don't see how they can. That's my opinion. And looking at all these different people that analyze this stuff all around the world, and you have to look at if this is a global problem now. This is a worldwide thing. And that's why it's biblical, because God's got his finger in this too. Don't forget.
That's
how we're going to succeed.
Dave from X22 talks a little bit about this. He believes that Trump has a plan with the White Hats through the military to take control of the election. And they've already got the ballots already printed out so that when the computers go down and all the chaos happens, you know, the elections are going to go forward, but it's going to go forward with paper ballots. So maybe in some places, maybe in other places, not so much. I don't know. I would imagine the problem with the computers would be everywhere, so probably everywhere would have to go to a paper ballot.
Yeah, they have to put enough paper ballots in to make it a valid election, which, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
They cannot use those machines. Those machines are compromised. They go on the internet. They've been hacked. They've been this and that. So they can't. I don't see how they could get that all fixed right away and verified where everybody would trust the election. Once it comes out what they did and how they did it, nobody's going to trust the election. I don't care who gets elected. They're going to say, well, how do we know you're elected? How do we know you didn't stick your ghost in the machine? You know what I mean?
Well,
almost has to be paper.
Yeah, well, Dave thinks it's all set up that way, ready to go. And
yeah.
Everything's ready to rock and roll. The military's going to have to get involved and participate in this as far as guarding the election and making movements.
We have went into other foreign countries and run paper ballots for them and protected their elections. Yeah. We've done it for other countries.
No.
Protected their borders, too.
Well, look, we used to use paper. It's no big deal to go back to it. They know how to do it. And like I said, they've been doing it in other countries. Of course, I don't know what kind of shenanigans they were pulling with the paper ballots, because we put a lot of puppets in, too. We probably did that with paper ballots. You know, whatever the technology is, there you could always cheat. You know, if you don't put in. The best way is the way that we have it now in America, where you have the poll watchers watching from all sides. The people actually enforce it. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So, and they could go back to that very easy. I mean, that's still in effect anyway, you know.
Well, on the battleground states, I remember seeing on TV, and well, not TV, but on the internet, really, because I don't watch TV no more per se, but where they were blocking the windows and kicking people out so that they could do their cheating, the people can't allow that to go on.
No. And you know what? They should have been rioting and breaking the windows at that point. Everybody was too nice. Well, you know what it is? You had no law enforcement officials that would enforce the law. They're all afraid to enforce the law.
They control it.
Yeah.
All right, I'm going to leave you unmuted here. I'm going to try to maintain you. You can't. What kind of problem do you have coming in as a host?
No, it's my computer. It's my audio on my other computer, so.
You got to get that fixed.
I think I can mute it on the phone, though. I just be careful.
All right,
I do have one more. I did have one more question. Excuse me, Gerard. And
yeah,
John.
Go ahead. Yeah.
Related to the Bar Association, is there any action being taken against the bar?
They got to go. They're illegal. They shouldn't be operating within our judicial system at all. I don't know if you're aware of the original 13th Amendment. Our founding fathers already dealt with this problem back in 1818 with the original 13th Amendment. And the 13th Amendment disappeared around, 1865 or so. What they came in with was the 14th Amendment, and then they divided the 14th Amendment into two amendments and discarded the old 13th Amendment and replaced it with a different 13th Amendment and then a 14th Amendment. So all of that is going to be corrected. They cannot operate. The bar cannot continue within a court system. They are the reason why we are where we're at. They are the minions of the New World Order. They've been operating in the United States before we became the United States. They were operating in the colonies in 1750 is when they entered the colonies and started to destroy our courts. And they've been working ever since. And they've done a heck of a job. They destroyed our economic system. They destroyed our education. They destroyed our judicial system, our political system. They've taken over and destroyed everything that's worth anything for we the people. They have destroyed it. And they got to go. And they got to take their civil law with them. Because they even abrogated the common law and through the Rules Enabling Act of 1934. And with that, they abrogated the common law. They took away all of the right of the writs of the sovereign people. You know, we've got numerous powers of writs. And they actually, I think it was Rule 60 on the federal level, took it away. So people don't use the writs anymore. I still use them because it's null and void from our perspective. And we're just building a case at this point. You know, in the beginning when we started to go into the courts, we thought we might have some success. But we've had very little success. And we've got hundreds of cases that we've been through. And yet we still only have a little bit of success. But we realized early on as we're going through this, well, okay, fine, we're building a case against these people. We've got all the evidence. You know, the way they broke the law in New York federal courts is the same way they broke the law in California or Texas or Washington or any other place. It's the same thing in the state courts. They all break the law in the same way. They do the same thing. So that proves conspiracy.
Absolutely. It's like a racketeering influence, coercion, organization. It's like RICO. But if there's any action plan, I would love to see an action plan. I'd like to take part in that action plan
I think it's going to be military. Because they're already committing treason. They're foreign corporations. They're supposed to register as a foreign corporation, and they have it. So they've been committing treason for years. They're going to be arrested, and they're going to be hung by the neck till they're dead is what's going to happen. I don't think there's going to be a bunch of court cases. I think they're going to declare them null and void. That's it.
There is participation in an action plan right now. Okay.
Right.
Together a more in-depth plan working with some other people right now. What we're going to be doing is we're going to collect certain information and petition every state court in the United States. We only have to do one per state. And so once we do the petition and they deny the petition, which they're going to do, because what we're asking for is the evidence that will put them in jail, so they're not going
right.
to get it.
We're asking them to put their head in the noose. Go ahead.
So we're going to be asking people to get involved in this because it's going to take a lot of people to help us work through the paperwork, get it done, make some phone calls, and work this through the system. I've already done the writing of the paperwork for the case. Mm-hmm. We have more writing to do to put together, but we do need people to help us, and that's where we're going. While I'm talking about that, for anybody that may be retired or semi-retired that has a lot of time, is articulate, and could maybe make a lot of phone calls for us to a lot of our committees of safety. So if anybody wants to volunteer for that, then we can use more than one person. Just get a hold of Jan, J-A-N, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Tell them you're interested in volunteering working with us on the national level to communicate with our committees of safety. and we'll work that out. Eventually, at some point, because we, even that National Liberty Alliance has a committee of correspondence, and and with that, we'll always be communicating. We're looking to go professional at some point. It's a matter of getting funding.
Well, I'd like to give you, for instance, I'd like to file, I'd like to file a case against an association out in, a homeowners association, Springbrook Terrace, out in Connecticut. Now, I want to file against them, and then I'm looking at the attorney that they have, right?
This is a home association?
The homeowners association, Bill Ward, they totally violated my rights. And
If you're in a homeowners association, came into an agreement into a subdivision or something, or what exactly, how are you connected with it?
Oh, I owned a condo out there, and so I bought in, and they try to control my ability to rent my place, and they basically demanded a copy of my lease under $25 a day if I didn't hand it over.
Hang on one second. Gerard, I'm going to unmute you again. Your sound is coming through. Mute yourself on your side so that you can pick up the mic when you want to talk. So let me unmute you again. So keep yourself muted if you're not talking, because I would hear a lot of sounds coming from your end. Well, here's the statute, Marianne. They've contracted with you, and you've agreed to the contract. If you have a contract where there is no meeting of the mind, and you can prove that, then you might have a chance. So when you went into the association and they gave you the contract and the agreement that this is how you need to live, did you have any debate or conversation concerning any of the details in that contract?
No, I didn't even get a chance to look at anything, because you're sitting there at these mortgage company, you're sitting there at this meeting, and there's a huge stack of a sign here, initial there, do you agree to the rules and regulations? Sure, because you think they're going to be reasonable, but they're not reasonable when they're telling you that you can rent for 2 years and then you have to live in it for a year, or not rent it for a year and leave it open, and then you can rent it for another 2 years. Otherwise, you have to pay 10%. 10% is damages, and then if you read the actual regulation, it makes no sense. And that's just it. It was never intended to be enforced. And the guy, and the Stephen Grushkin, who is the attorney who rewrote that the entire amended declaration, my brother-in-law owned the place at the time when they were doing all this. And he had said, they told him, don't add any fines. They said they didn't want any, they weren't going to vote for it if there was a fine. So they didn't use the word fine. Instead, they used the word 10% as damages. And
here's the situation, though. Look, you signed a contract to move in to do what has to be done. That's a problem, number one, against you. I mean, as far as really getting any kind of success. But on the other side of the coin, there are certain things that are unlawful, and there could be certain things that are unlawful in common law that just is common sense that people would say, hey, that's unlawful. I know in New York I learned very early on as a contractor, a general contractor, and signing contracts, that there are certain things that cannot be put in a contract, because it's being paid really for a one-sided contract, and it becomes illegal contract, and it's something about taking advantage. But it is a hard argument to make, number one. Number two, if you're going into a homeowners association and you're making an agreement, you're making the agreement, I believe, with all of the other participants, which are the people that live there. And if you can gather together and get a meeting and discuss with these individuals that, hey, let's change this whole thing because it's all screwy, that's the real ownership of what's being set up. I don't see why things can't be changed, and people will look at it from the perspective of what's right and what's wrong, and after all, it's applied against them too. So, hey, yeah, let's change things. So that's a way to maybe make some changes. The other thing is, because a lawyer came in, and you can't trust lawyers at all, they're I've met very few, maybe I could count them all in my hand, any lawyer that I might have any trust in my entire lifetime. That's how few. I've met a lot of lawyers. But they all put things so strong to benefit themselves or the person that they're writing the contract for to begin with. So if the contract is being written and the people don't have the power to come together and change it, I think that's problematic because, again, it's a homeowners association. It's the people who own the homes. So, but it's still an uphill battle, hard, and you're going up against the status quo. Just because you're going up against the status quo, you lose because that's what they do. The justice does not prevail there at all. But there are ways that you can do things. Again, you have to get real knowledgeable of the due process, learn how things work, and then come up with good strategies and ideas and try to figure things out and turn it against them. So,
Interference.
Mm-hmm. All right, we're going to move on to the next caller.
Okay.
So any final statement before we move on, Marianne?
We just need to get rid of these bar attorneys. They're ridiculous.
They're going. They have to go. The law requires them to go. It's called the 13th Amendment. We got a copy up on the website. And again, there were two 13th Amendments. One was done in 1818. Well, maybe it was 1819. Okay,
thank you.
Great the call. Thank you. Okay, we'll take our next caller. Let's see. It looks like we hit the button here. Is it James? Well, what state are you coming in from? 631.
Hi, sir. My name's Jim. I'm from New York. First time listener. I was given the phone number because I belong to an organization called Americans for Legal Reform. I'm an advocate, and I just wanted to hear what was going on, so any information I could pass on to other people. Like you said, because it's tough to get people involved. It is tough to get people involved. I'm a court watcher at family court, and I can't express to you the horrors, atrocities by the vultures, these lawyers and judges. It is horrendous. As a man, a veteran, a member of this community for 56 years, I cannot, it shouldn't, how this system could be in play for so long. What's going on here? You have innocent, loving children. If anybody or your listeners Google Thomas Valva, V-L-V-A, he was a child that was murdered in his garage. The father was a cop. And CPS, which is another disaster. You got to remember, we're talking innocent, loving children. He was froze to death in a garage. The father kept him in the garage. But anyway, the cop father kept him in the garage. Anyway, so what happened is there was an investigation, and the district attorney out here in Suffolk County, Ray Tierney, after doing his investigation, said CPS is a complete failure. This is the district attorney. Well, if CPS is a failure, and they're an arm of the courts, the family courts, then the family courts is a failure. Because they work hand in hand. How come, the father got prosecuted along with the stepmother, and, they were given life. It was, it was national news. But my thing is, shouldn't a judge in that case have been prosecuted? Shouldn't the attorney for the child that deals with those children? How come nobody, CPS, they couldn't even touch them because they weren't allowed to get the personal information of what happened when they interviewed what happened to these kids. 11 reports from the school teachers in Mauritius, 11 CPS, that they were eating garbage from the garbage cans. They went, it was stained so close, 11 reports. And that's what the district attorney was. He said, how many others that we don't know about? Only because of the benefit of the trial where the father was prosecuted were they able to get that information. Otherwise, they wouldn't be able to get the CPS information. But moving on a little further is I court watch, and I have this judge.
Before you go any further, let me make some notes concerning what you did say. the family court system is the worst system I've ever seen. I personally do believe that every single one of those judges, without any exception, should either be at the end of a rope or 20 years in jail. It should be something really seriously harsh. The damages that they have done to people, specifically to children, is just unbelievable. And this is exactly put together. This is the fault of the bar. These are the people that have created this system and set the entire judicial system on fire. There is no courts of justice, and family courts are the worst. They are the worst. They got to go. You can't have a family court. It just doesn't work. When you get a bunch of lawyers to discuss family problems, well, that's just, forget it. It just will never, ever happen. You have to have professional people to deal with family problems. Not that you're going to take their children away. Not that you're going to put people in jail. Not that you're going to fleece them for money and continue. It's a money-making thing to begin with.
I appreciate that. But, you know, listen, there are cases of abuse and neglect where people shouldn't be around children.
Yeah,
and,
no,
you know, we could agree on that. You know, but we're not talking about that. We're talking about the corruption where the atmosphere, these judges, I see on a daily basis. You talk about retired. I'm a retired iron worker. I knew nothing for 34 years. I knew nothing about the courts or anything like that because I just didn't deal with them until the untimely death of my brother, who had a five-year-old son that had to go through this garbage. You know, I mean, he had sole custody of the child, and then, you know, because the mother unfortunately did drugs, so he had no custody. So when he died, people, you know, on that side were filing, and, you know, I had to pay $450,000. I had to pay for my mother's attorney. I wasn't going to leave her on hook. All of a sudden, people were filing, making motions. Now, as an uncle, I don't have the rights. As a grandmother, that's why I'm in the courts today. Thank God today everything's all settled and everything like that, and I see him. But I can't unwind what I've seen, you know. And you know, my brother, just like when we were in the military, and you know, I was in Okinawa and he was in California. You know, hey, he's just a little further away. So you know, I can't get out of my head what goes on over here and those lawyers, what they're doing to families. There's people coming out of there. There's parents that are, you know, they're married. There's the thing called alienation. You know, until you witness this, like I had no clue that this would exist. It's an embarrassment. And anything that I could do, that's why I'm listening. That's why somebody gave me this number. Because, you know, just like the local library, we have a law library in there. The public, the people that go in there, they need copies. They don't even know that they could go right upstairs and make copies. So what I try and do is I stand outside the courthouse. And, you know, just give people information and stuff like that. But, you know, you talk about fixing something. I don't, you know, how could children not be the biggest priority? And I got to tell you, I'm a little, I try and get people together. And it's tough to get people together just to come out for children, innocent children. So that's why I'm here and that's why I'm listening. So
yeah, well,
I appreciate the good work that you do and people that are listening and following, because it's people like yourself that will make the change. This has gone on way, way too long.
Yeah, well, it's been going on a lot longer than you even realize, longer than we've been alive. This has been a problem for a very, very long time. It has gotten, of course, worse, and they're blatant about it. They don't care that people see they're evil anymore. I can tell you that from experience. And
I do got a question. What was the original question when you get a chance? Sorry to get off tangent there.
All right. Well, look, at what we're doing is we're building committees of safety. We teach people how to have government by consent, and it has to be done at the grassroots level, and you have to build a committee of safety, and we put together a program on how to do that. If you're interested, you're out in Long Island. You know, I'm willing, if you can gather together a large enough group, I'm willing to travel out there and teach people how to have government by consent. I'm kind of hoping this summer to be able to tour the New York at least, and maybe Connecticut, and potentially Jersey, and maybe some other states.
I'm going to look at your website. I mean, we're one of the biggest, like I said, if you look up American for Legal Reform, you know, you look at the membership that they have there, you know, it's big. But my question that I want to make sure that
Hold on. Before you move to the next question, let's stay with this for a moment or two. Yep. How large an organization is it, and how serious are the people?
Well, it's over 25,000 people. 25,000 people. You know, they've been around for 30 years. Carl Lanzier is the founder. Gary Jacob.
If I can come out and talk to those people, and they can muster together 1,000 people, let's say, you could pretty much take a lot of New York back. Definitely the island, you could take back both counties. And what this membership? How broad is it? Does it go out into the other counties of New York City, or is it just?
It branches out. Like I said, you could go on the website. You know, American for Legal Reforms. .com, and they have meetings. They stop during the summertime, and then they pick up again.
If you can connect me with their leadership, and I get to talk with those people, I'm sure I can convince them to take a look at the plan we have, and we'll give it to them. We could take
right, and that hence the reason for me. Somebody giving me the information was I got a call to listen and see what was going on here.
Okay, before we go to your next question, though, let me just give you a little bit of information that you can look at and then potentially take it back to those individuals. And this is true for anybody anywhere. If you're connected with a large group, and if we can get connected with them and give them a presentation on how to have government by consent, I'm sure we can build a lot of committees of safety. But basically, we have two tabs that you want to focus in on. One is the educational tab, and you'll find that on the blue bar. And just if you click on Education Starts Here, you'll see a breadcrumb trail, you know, that you just follow along. And the other thing you need to be looking at is Start a Committee of Safety. That's also on the blue bar. And if you click on that, again, you follow through a breadcrumb trail leading you how to build and create a committee of safety. But the real breakdown of how that works and so on and so forth, you'd come down under Start a Committee of Safety to a tab that says Handbooks, Videos, and Tools. And by the way, this video, I see you're coming in on the phone, so you're not seeing the desktop.
Yes, that's why I'm going to go to your website when I get to the computer. But like I said, I got a text message just a couple of hours before this started. Yep.
All right. With your computer, you can go out and you can see under today's issues, I will be posting today's meeting today, tonight. Probably before midnight, I'll post it up online. It'll be underneath today's issues, and you come down to NLA Monday Open Forum videos, and you'll be able to roll it back and see the sharing of the desktop at the same time I'm talking. But going back to starting the Committee of Safety, so you can get a little information on what we're doing and how it works, at least some point of view of it. Then maybe you could talk to those people and maybe I can have a conversation with them. But you come down to under Start a Committee of Safety, you come down to Handbooks, Videos, and Tools, which is everything you need to start a Committee of Safety. But we have handbooks. One of the handbooks is Committee of Safety Organizing Handbook. If you click on that, it's 66 pages, and it's step-by-step how to create a committee of safety, the process, the procedure, how you work things out with your sheriff, and how you take back the educational system, the towns. You have to start at the grassroots level and work up, and as you connect through committees of correspondence, and this is what our founding fathers did and built in order to create this great nation of ours, is through committees of safety. Paul Revere was on the Committee of Correspondence for the Committee of Safety. And there was many Paul Reveres, you know, many people who were doing the job that Paul Revere was doing. But in any event, clicking on this handbook, if you go through it, you'll get a good idea of what we're putting together. NLA's purpose is to create a venue, a place where people can come and get education, learn to organize and create committees of safety and take back the courts and take back the political process on a grassroots level through government by consent, and also to connect all of the committees of safety because every county has to communicate with some business with other counties that share the same problems. So you have to come together on it. And the same thing with states. So it's important to have that communications between all of the different counties. And so every county has to have a subcommittee. I mean, every committee of safety has to have a subcommittee called a committee of correspondence. Okay. And the individuals at National Liberty Alliance that would be making contact with these individuals and helping these individuals, they would be the Committee of Correspondence for National Liberty Alliance. But we're a hands-off organization also. We don't give anybody marching orders. We give the people education. We give people, right. Teach people the process of law, how things work. We'll be advising people. We advise people on law, on creating committees of safety, and many, many things along this process. And we have on our educational side of things, we have numerous courses. We have court access in the common law course, and that'll teach you, that'll give you enough information to be a lawyer, really. It's a law course. We have other courses. Other than that, we have a foundational study. We have constitutional course 101, introduction to the Constitution. We have a free civics course, and then we have government by consent course, a militia course, and a jury administrator accredited course. So we've got lots of courses, and then we have a higher education beyond that, too. So we have a lot to offer people, and people will get as much education as they want. But collectively together, many hands make light work. So, people, when you come together, people have different, fortes, so to speak, different interests. And so collectively, you can have a lot of knowledge, in opposed to just one person having a lot of knowledge. So everybody doesn't have to learn everything, but we all have to learn a little bit. We all have to participate. So if the people expect to be ignorant and free, as Jefferson said, they expect what never was and never will be. So we have to be educated. Only the people can save America. Only the people can control this government. And we'll show you how to do it. That's the purpose of National Liberty Alliance. But
Thank you. I really appreciate that. And that's the reason why I'm sure I was given the number to listen tonight and to gain insight, because that is very valuable to other people that are in the system that would like to know a little bit more about what's going on with different things. So it's just another resource, and I will absolutely make sure that the leadership knows to speak, because they do have, sometimes they speak with people from California, all over the United States, and sometimes they'll have them just on a, they have a big, like 50-foot screen that they have in a library, and they'll have a bunch of members come up there. So I'll definitely get that information out
there. Yeah, we could come in on Zoom, or we could do things live if they wanted, because it's down in New York City. We're only about 50 miles north of New York City. So, I'd be willing to travel down. If necessary, but it is right. Much more convenient to do it on, like, Zoom or something like that.
Yeah, whatever you guys would work out. But so my question, getting back to the little question. So as I'm court watching, and they don't like me in the courtroom, because what happened? I'm in family court, and the vultures, the lawyers, they're sitting in there. I get in there at 9 o'clock. They don't get there till 9:30, and then they come in 1, 2, 3, 4, 7 of them, and they go to the county attorney. And they talk about their case, what they're going to do, because they never want to surprise the judge with anything. And what happens is, because I'm in there, what they do is they close the court. What happens is, when the judge comes in, they'll call the case, everybody will swear in, and then the county or an attorney will say, Your Honor, based on sensitive information, we're requesting the court to be closed to the public. And then the judge will say, go to every attorney, and they'll say, we agree with that, and they all agree with that. And then the judge will turn around and say, based on sensitive information, the court is going to be closed to the public. And then I stand up and I say, Your Honor, my name is James. I respectfully request to be heard in regards to the closing of the court. He gets up from his chair. This is the judge. He gets up from his chair, and he leaves the courtroom. In other words, he's prevented me from putting anything else on the record. Because, as with the hint, Hinton hearings, you know, there's four criteria for somebody to close the court. Just citing sensitive information isn't enough. You need to know the nature of the sensitive information, and the closure must be as least as restrictive as possible. But what happens is because he gets up and leaves the courtroom, now the court offices, being I can't speak, I have to leave. You know, and not just me. It used to be just me when I didn't know any better about 2 years ago when they would close the courtroom and I would leave by myself and the lawyers would stay in there. Then I, speaking to different people, found out that it shouldn't be just me leaving. Everybody that's not directly involved in the case, including the lawyers. So now it caused so much problems because now the calendar, because all those lawyers, every time they closed the courtroom, all those lawyers got to come out, and then they got to go back in, and they got to come out, and they go back in. My question to you is, you know, I wrote the chief administrative judge, who was the one who, by the way, he did, he was the one that had it where the lawyers had to leave with me, which was, I felt, a win for me. But the fact that this judge is doing that, how is that right? Shouldn't he give me an answer? You know, because you talk about the 14th Amendment, which, you know, I did a little bit of research there, and that gives me due process. So, I mean, I have a right to access the courts, and I should have, you know, if they're going to violate or infringe on my right to do that, then I should have the opportunity to be heard, just like every lawyer has the opportunity to be heard, and especially point out that he's not in, you know, he's not following the four criteria to close the court. That's it.
Well, look, the courts are corrupt. They're totally destroyed. You know, the Constitution provides only for law and equity in the United States. Now, equity is under common law as much as law is under common law because we're a common law nation. And so the king of our court is God, and that's established in the Declaration of Independence. And the Constitution requires that government secure the blessings of liberty. Also, the Constitution was written by we, the people. Our founding fathers wrote it on their behalf and the behalf of us, we, the people, which were their posterity, ultimately. And so law and equity is the only thing permitted in the United States of America. They have taken that and they've abolished the common law. Now, law is common law, period. If you go into Bouvier's, dictionary, or you go into Black's Law, and you look into that dictionary, and you look up law, in law, or at law, that is law, the common law. Courts that proceed according to the common law, which brings us back to who we are as a people. Equity is legislative law, and that's what the court you're talking about. It's an administrative court. It's an equity court. They claim to be a court of record, but they're not a court of record. A court of record is one that pursues the justice through the common law. So the only two is permitted in legislative law. Now, the legislative law is only for people who work for government agencies and to control the government agencies and people who are working commercial activities. That's what legislative law is for. For instance, traffic court is for commercial activity. It's not for we the people. We have nothing to do with that. There is no jurisdiction. They have no jurisdiction over. They don't have personam jurisdiction, so they have no jurisdiction over our person. And that's what people don't realize. Now, when you go into a family court, and this is true with all the courts, and as soon as you see a judge sitting up there, you know you're in an administrative court because they're making decisions claiming to be under the common law, but they're really under civil law, which has, nothing to do with we the people. The whole thing is a fraud. There's no way that you can put a court system up that's going to be called a family court system and do the work that they're doing. What they're doing should be done by people who are trained to deal with problems with families. Clinicians, for instance, should be running that whole system. And the whole point of the whole process is to correct the problems that a family may have and not to take their children, not to destroy their family, not to charge them all kinds of money and destroy usually the father, take every cent that they have from that person, or whatever it is that they're doing. They're just totally destructive. So the clinicians, the people who have an experience to be able to look at the problems and bring them therapeutically through the problems as a family and to deal with it and bring them back, you know, to where they should be, And if there's something that needs to be dealt with from a legal perspective, and they're not getting the cooperation from maybe things that need to be dealt with, then that's when they can be pulled into the court for whatever kind of requirements that the court might see to push forward. But remember, whenever you have an individual, a man, sitting in a desk, making a decision on your life, you're not in an American court. You're in a foreign court. You're in a court of jurisdiction really unknown, because who knows what it really is. It's civil law, ultimately, which is municipality law, which leads right back to Babylonian law. And the whole thing of Babylonian law is to fleece the people and to enslave them. That's the whole process, to keep them under control. And these family courts should not exist at all, period. They're just destructive. So
yeah, they don't even have jury trials in family court. It's the one judge. It's crazy.
Well, that's what has to happen if you go into a court system for instance, if you set it up properly, again, with people qualified to deal with problems and family issues and family problems, and you're not, you know, and people have to follow a plan if there's something that caused them to be there, that they have to be there. So someone is being abused. Well, let's fix the problem if it's possible. Some problems can't be fixed. And then you might have to move it into the regular court system. And guess who decides? Not a judge. The people decide. It's called the jury.
Right.
The people that decide. Okay? We the people. So what people have to realize is we the people ordained and established the Constitution. We are the lawmakers. We're above their law because we gave them the power and the authority to write law to control themselves and commercial activity, but we never gave them power to control our actions, whatever we do. Only what we've given them to control, but they've gone far beyond it. They've taken control of everything. They've destroyed everything. That's what evil does. It's all about money to them, and they care not what destruction they leave behind them.
But I just want to say thank you. I have hope. after hearing some, there's hope and there's people that are involved. And I just want to say thank you for listening to me and taking the time to the lengthy time to express what your organization is all about. And I definitely will be in contact with you. I'm going to give your information to the leadership, and hopefully they could have some dialogue.
Okay. Yeah, and if you connect with Jan, J-A-N, at National Liberty Alliance, he can give you my phone number. You can tell him that I gave you permission. And then ask my phone number over to these individuals, maybe, and then I can have a phone conversation with them. And it will, you know, if they're interested, I hope they are, we're going to teach them how to have government by consent, because only the people can save America. You know, we have devolution. Play. I don't know if you're familiar with that, but devolution is in play, and this nation is going to be given back to the people. But it comes back to the same question that Benjamin Franklin had when he came out of the debates and was asked, you know, what kind of government do we have? And it's a republic, if you can keep it. You see, a republic requires people to consent to this government. We're a natural law government. We're the only natural law republic in the entire world. And there's only been two in history. Israel was one, and the United States is the second. And God says, blessed is the nation whose God is the Lord. And that's who we are. We're a Christian nation built upon common law. Common law comes from the Bible. It's God's law written in the hearts of men. You and I know when an injustice was done. We just need to sit and listen to the facts, and we can figure out, hey, this person has been injured or they haven't been injured. And we can also figure out, because we're people, we live in the same, you know, the same place they live in. We have feelings. We have a job. We participate in society. We can see and understand what needs to be done to restore that individual. But government can't do it because they're destructive, and they can't do it. And they can't do it anyway lawfully because we're not set up that way. They need to learn to read the Constitution, what they need. We are going to get our courts back. We'll get them back by the end of this year. We'll be taking our courts back. We'll be taking the federal courts all the way down through the state courts, bring our courts of justice in, and cast out all the civil law.
Great.
Okay, we're going to take our next caller. Appreciate coming in on the call.
Thank, Thank you, sir. Have a good night.
Thank you. You too. Jim from PA, how you doing? You got the mic. Go right ahead.
Hi there. Can you hear me?
We can hear you, Jim. Go right ahead.
Okay. All right. This is Richard from Fargo, North Dakota.
Well, I just got a question. What, Richard from where? North Dakota?
Fargo, North Dakota, yeah.
Okay. Terry, maybe you can change that for us. Okay, go right ahead.
Okay.
So I'm seeing you come in as okay.
What am I coming in as?
I see your name up here is Jim from Pennsylvania, so we must have put the wrong name at another time or something. I don't know. But we'll fix that. Go right ahead.
No, I think you're talking to Kennedy, Richard Kennedy.
Yes.
If you look, that's when he talks, that's the one.
Okay, I'm sorry. Bye.
And what state did you say he's from?
North Dakota, for me. For Richard Kennedy.
Okay, well, Jim is above you. He should have came in first, but when I hit the next...
Yeah, well, go ahead and take it. I'll wait.
Well, no, because I'll have to mess the whole system up to do that, so I'll take Jim after you. Go right ahead.
All right. We're in the process of buying a house, and it's a first-time home buyer program, and everything is going good, and all of a sudden here on Friday, I got something in the mail saying that everything's been pretty much taken care of except for one condition. I have to provide and written payment, payoff for a release of record of the following, a judgment of dollar amount from a bank versus Richard E. Kennedy from an address that I used to live in, 10, 12 years ago, filed September 1, 2016, and then it gives the file number. And in the judgment shown above is due to a name similarity, the appropriate affidavit must be executed in place of record. And that's all I've got. All right. There's requirements in Schedule Part B. This is from the title insurance company that's doing all this stuff. And it was a total shock to me. And I, the banker called me and said, you got a judgment. I said, what? And I had no idea the thing was even out there. And when I saw what it was, and I said,
Hold on. The judgment is on the property?
No, it's just me. It's a recorded judgment
you.
From a bank I used to work for.
Okay, and you're going to buy property and you're having a problem because they claim there's a judgment on you?
Yeah, they claim there's a judgment on me that's going to affect, and here's my question. How does a judgment on me, something that 10 years ago, well, actually, there's a couple of definitions that when I went into North Dakota, I've known for a long time that certain actions have a 10-year limitation, actions have a 6-year limitation, especially like in credit card debt or, repossessed car loan, stuff like that. They can file, go take you to court or turn over to a collection agency, but they have to do something with having – I used to do this when I was in banking. It's one thing to get the judgment. It's another thing to get it executed. And what most people don't do is they don't execute it. I used to get judgments all the time, but I would – when I was in the banking business, say for deficiency balance or whatever, and on a repossession type of stuff. And I was taught – I learned that, it doesn't do any good to get the judgment unless you have it executed. And I had to give notice of what I was doing, and they had a certain number of days to respond, and then if I got the judgment, I had to give them notice again, or the court would give notice. This is what happened. You have 30 days to respond. And we've talked about that here on this program about responding to affidavits. I have never been served. I knew I had a debt that was for fraud, that the bank was robbing money from me, and it was an unscrupulous bank manager, and I kept complaining. He was doing some things, taking money out of my account to pay something else. It was just like giving from Peter to give to Peter. But it caused huge overdrafts and caused checks to be returned and stuff. And so that's what this balance consists of. And I told the guy, I said, I'm not paying this. This is just totally fraud. I'm not going to pay it. So, well, I'm going to put it on your credit report. Go ahead. But here's the thing.
Let me tell you something. First of all, the credit.
This happened back in 2012. Okay, that's what.
Well, let me tell you something. The credit reports are operating unlawfully. You're innocent until proven guilty. When they put things onto your credit report, and especially if there's no judgment, which would require, of course, something that went through the courts and would have to go through a proper court. It can't go through an administrative court. So it would have to go through a state court, for instance, that particular judgment. But they're not permitted to just put things on your record for bad credit because you were late on certain payments or this exists there or that exists there. because again, that's making someone guilty before they even have a trial or anything. We're innocent until proven guilty. You haven't been proven guilty yet. Now, there is a process to go through this. You can go to your credit report companies, and you can have them erase all your information. There is a process to do that. I've often thought about sitting down to really study that and make a simpler plan. But I think Gerard has information, but I don't think he could talk. He's got a problem with his mic. Talk about that another week if Gerard's here.
Yeah, I'm aware of that stuff, too. That's how I found out about it. There's a guy, I forget the guy's name, but he did write a book on how to get out of this stuff and just never claim. And I have some things, some bad debt that I got out of this thing, credit cards as well, because of all this stuff. Well, they'll call you, and I say, I have no recollection of any such debt. And just don't claim it. Now, the clock starts, and this is the thing I wanted to get to on here. This thing is, I said, as soon as the banker told me about this, that thing's stale dated. That's old. That's over 10 years old. Well, when was it filed? Well, he didn't know. So I got the letter from the title insurance company, and they said it was September 1 of 2016. I said, wait a minute. On that kind of stuff, and I went into the North Dakota statutes, and I looked up actions having 6-year limitations, actions having 10-year limitations. And this, I initially felt that it fell under the 6-year limitations, because that's all the other stuff does. So I left all this stuff out there once a 6, and you're right, the credit bureau was reporting all this stuff. And I said, you got to take that off of there, because I got married, and I had a distant, you got some bad credit on your name. I said, that thing has been disputed a long time ago, so why is it even on there? Well, they told me I had to go dispute it and get it off. Once I did, now it was not there. But this thing has never showed up in the last 10, 12 years, 14 years. It's never showed up. I've had background checks done for my CDL, for hazmat, and I've had, they got to go in, and all my records get short. All public records are being recorded. This never showed up until the title insurance company came up with it. But here's the question I got on it. This guy just drove me crazy. I said, for one thing, it's old. Well, I went in North Dakota statutes. There's two parts, 28-01-15. And North Dakota Century Code is how it comes under that title. And so I looked it up, and then it actions having 6-year limitations, which is what I feel this is. I said, that's already done. This is about a 2- or 3-part question I got to get to.
Well,
first, we got to establish something.
You know, let's make sure we're talking about the same thing here now. Limitations, under common law, there is no statute of limitations because there's no statutes. As long as the evidence is fresh enough and people are still alive to testify, well, the case could go through and could be won or lost depending on the people here. Okay. But with that said, on the one side, statute of limitations is as far as going after you for something. They only have so much time. But once they've come after you, and they've done something, I'm not sure exactly what might be on the books for the law, that things might fall away after a period of time. I don't know that you would call that statute of limitations.
I can read it. They call this actions having 10-year limitations, actions having 6-year limitations, and then they list the different categories. All right, the one that I got out of some other the debt, I had an identity theft fraud thing going, and they had that on. I said, you got to take that off of there. Well, it was a big process I had to go through to get it. I got it off, but what I'm getting at is this has requirements under this thing that I have to pay that judgment off and before they'll approve insuring the property. But there's some terminology that I'm a little bit kind of questioning what they're doing on here. One of the things, and I'll read the statement on the one that I started with, on this, the following actions must be commenced within 6 years after the claim for relief has accrued. Claim for relief. So I looked that up. The claim for relief, time begins to run at the time when a cause of action arises, i.e., at the time when an injury occurred, or at the time when a loan was defaulted on, or at the time when fraud was committed, and to be filed, and it has to be filed in the state of North Dakota, and then I put down a note, in a financial judgment filing, ? And that's what it said. Written and oral contracts limit is 6 years. Written and
okay,
oral
contracts. Okay, let me tell you how you could fix this. Okay, what's the name of the agency that's reporting on you?
Westcor. Well, it's Cass County Court is where they had it recorded. Well, see, yeah, but, how did that thing get on there? Why has it been kept secret until I want to buy a house? Now, there's some terminology that I want to get to that I think is very important to understand.
But hold on. How did they find this? You know, there are institutions, there are companies out there that collect data on people and give credit reports and so on. How did they find you? They must have found you through some credit report.
Well, it's never been on a credit report. That's what I'm saying. I always check, man.
But it's
got to
be somewhere. Hold on.
They gave me a file number.
I understand, but that's not the point. The point is they're not going around checking the courts for that. They must be checking some organization that has a business going to make the report, the credit report companies. I mean, you got to figure out where it came from, because they're not going out calling the, you know, checking with every court to see if there's something going on you. I can't see that that's happening that way.
I don't know. They just gave me a file number, so I'm assuming it was from the from our county court is where it was recorded.
No. That's where it's listed, maybe, but that's not how they found it. You need to go back to these people and find out how did they find this. Then you'll find out that there's some credit report, organization, company, whatever, that is making money putting the reports out on this that they're using. And if that is the case, it's only a matter of quoting the law, laying out on a paper, and send them a notice and demand, and you're requiring them to respond to that notice and demand. We teach notice and demands, by the way. We teach it in our law course, but you can also find information underneath Education Starts Here, come down to law, and then come down underneath that. You come over to court forms and process, and you can learn how to do a notice and demand right here. We've got the form layout for you. But you have to find out who's got the report, who's reporting on you.
Yeah,
then
yeah.
You can shut them down by using the law and giving them, 20 days to respond and comply.
Well, okay, but here's the thing. I'll read the sentence. The following action must be commenced within 6 years after the claim for relief has accrued. Now, according to this Schedule B, Part 1, Number 6, is provide written payoff instrument, pay and release of record, the following. So apparently this judgment of record is at the county court. Because they gave it.
Right there is the argument you just made. And you place that to the credit report company. They have to remove it. Now, you can go to the court and try to have that removed there. I don't know. Maybe you'll get more information on that there, too.
Well, the problem is they're holding up this whole thing. They're not going to go through with the closing, which is coming up in another week.
What is it, a credit card thing or something? I mean, what is it
It was a line of credit, a revolving line of credit, like a credit card.
Oh, okay. All right.
The money that was interest and late fees. All right, so now.
Hold on a minute. I can only give you another minute or so because we're closing down in 5 minutes and we've got two other people in the queue.
I want to get to this. The thing that I'm trying to get at is on this, how can this, something for me, because there's terminology listed in here about covenanter, conveyance, and I'm just going to read the statement on there that an action has to be taken. All right, so what we're getting at here is when did this thing start? Well, when I look up the definition of time accrues at the time when a course of action arises. Well, they had it recorded it. They got their judgment dated September 1, 2016, but this stuff was all going on back in 2010, 11, and 12. But by the time they did whatever they did to get that judgment, I'm assuming they had to go to the court to get it. All right, so how can I be...
Yeah, but it said
how does this affect the mortgage of the property that I'm buying? Can this thing be? Let's just say it was still active. It's not with it. It's within that 10 years, all right. But or the 6 years, whatever. But how can this affect my ability to purchase a property? I don't own any property, but from the seller. How does that cloud up his title?
Well, again, it's
can this thing be transferred as my
hold on, because you're confusing me now. You're the buyer, now then there's
the
seller, And then there's the agent that's going to secure the loan. And the loan isn't secured ultimately by the bank. The bank is just an agent, and they're paid a point or whatever, a half point, whatever it is that they're paid. And they're done, insurance. Okay? But your money's really coming from the Fed window, okay, for when you go out and buy a house. Now, through that process, the bank has nothing to do with it after that. But they do send you a booklet. They do tell you to make payments, and people pay them all the time. A certain percentage of that, however that works out, goes back to the Fed. But it's going on forever. Of course, the interest rates, it makes it ridiculous over a period of time. So the whole process is unlawful to begin with. There is no meeting of the mind.
Well, let me get to this part where I'm trying to see how can they hold this against me when it's not even my property. I'm buying it from. How can this be transferred? Let me read the other sentence. Actions have a 10-year limitation.
Hold on. Why don't you come back next week and we'll talk more, because we really run out of time. We've got 3 minutes.
Next week is too late, because next week is supposed to be the closing date.
Huh?
Next week is the closing date. Could I talk to you during the day?
Got a lot of things going on. So, I mean, try to make it real quick. Yeah. You know.
All right. I'll read the statement. 10 years after the claim of relief has accrued, : an action upon a contract contained in any conveyance or mortgage of a or instrument affecting the title to real property except a covenant of warranty, : an action upon which must be commenced within 10 years after the final decision against the title of the covenanter. Who's the covenanter and whose title?
Well, again, this is getting a little complex. The other thing is you said something about something on someone else's property that's affecting you. What's that about?
It's not on my – that's what this is saying. I'm assuming this is saying it's on something, it's on somebody else's property or on property that I'm trying to sell, which I'm not.
I don't have an answer for you, at least not with the information you gave me. I don't know that I can have an answer for you, but if you come back next week, I know you're saying you're going to run out of time because you have something going on within the week or something.
Well, we're supposed to have a closing, and they want me to have this thing paid off. But see, the thing I'm getting at is that I got a feeling that this is kind of being misapplied. And because everything I'm reading,
it's no doubt there's something going on here, because they're telling you you go pay this off and then we're going to move the loan going forward. It's still a blemish on your credit, and I don't know why they're doing it that way. I just don't understand.
Well, even if it was a legitimate blemish on my credit, how does that affect the property that I'm buying?
You're right. I don't know. I mean, again, when you say how does it affect the property that you're buying, I presume what you're saying is the property that you're buying is now going to have equity in it, and it's going to have some value to be able to help support the loan, because maybe you're going to put some money down or something. I don't know. Again, this is outside of my knowledge. I don't have much knowledge in this area. I mean, I could try to help you with some thoughts and ideas, but I don't have enough knowledge. I do know that Gerard has some knowledge on, at least on the credit card side of things, but I don't have that, so I really can't help you.
Well, I guess what I was looking for is a definition of a claim for relief that has accrued, which I did get.
Yeah, well, again, law is constructive, okay? You have to be very careful when you look at law, because it's a construction. It's constructive, and you have to look at every word. And sometimes words don't have the meanings you might find in a general dictionary, because there's law dictionaries. There's Black's Law that I use. There's Beauvoir's that I use. I'll use both of them. And then you can really come to an understanding of what they're talking about. But without really sitting down and really meditating on the law itself that's being used, the statute that's being used. And again, it becomes another problem, because, again, it's a statute now. But it does apply to them, but it doesn't apply to us.
The statute code is fairly well written. It's just a matter of, are these people misapplying that against the title of the covenanter?
Yeah. I don't have enough knowledge. I haven't really meditated and looked into the law as far as what you're talking about. And again, you've read the law. Law is tricky, okay? And you want to look at the law to see if it connects to something else because, you know, like let's take the IRS. If you're dealing with the IRS and they give you a code, you have to go through 3 or 4 or 5 codes before you come to understand what that one code means because it has its own interpretation.
Oh, yeah.
And that's how law is. Common law is much, much more simpler because it's common sense. You see, common sense is easy for anybody to understand. You know, generally speaking, anyway. But I got to move on.
That's what I say. I have a hard time with this thing. How does this affect the property that I'm buying? And because I'm going to claim the statute of limitations beyond the North Dakota. I think what I'll do is I'll call the Attorney General tomorrow. Maybe he can help put some.
I'd have to get.
Okay.
You know, study it a bit more. And again, Gerard might have answers for that better than I would. Because he's been through some of that stuff already.
Is there a way that I could call Gerard?
Well, he'll be on next Monday's call. He's on right now, but his mic's not working, so he's listening.
Could I call him on his phone?
Let me go, Richard, because I got to get these other two individuals, okay?
That's okay. Thank you. Okay, bye.
All right, thank you. Okay, we only got a minute or two. Let's go to Jim. Jim, you got the mic. Go right ahead.
Jim in Pennsylvania.
How you doing, Jim?
I'm going to have to prioritize my questions tonight. The first one is, has it been made public of the contents of the COVID vaccine? Has that been made public?
Good question. That's an answer. That's a question for Gerard. He's got a high expertise in that. He spent a lot of time with that. So if you could bring that question back next Monday, and I'll talk to Gerard, make sure he comes in and maybe take the mic off for a while, and he could deal with that question with you.
Let me share my experience with that question. I was at the pharmacy, and they had the COVID vaccine was being advertised. So I asked the pharmacist, could you tell me what, you know, describe or give me a description of what was in the COVID vaccine? And the pharmacist gave me a big piece of paper, and it had intentionally left blank, and you open it up, it's like 3 foot by 3 foot. It's some type of joke. It's blank. That's what the pharmacist gave me.
Really?
Well, I mean,
again,
is that
Why don't you come back? Listen, why don't you come back and ask that next week? Because, again, Gerard has a lot of knowledge on that. I don't. I just don't have the my focus is all on the law.
Okay. Well, one other quick thought. Has NLA had any success with Freedom of Information Act lawsuits?
Well, we haven't really executed any Freedom of Information Act. So we've done a lot of non-judicial foreclosure problems, and we've done some habeas corpuses, and we've done some indictments, but we haven't done anything on that area.
Yeah, there's an organization that sent me their publication, and it seems like they've been having a lot of success with FOIA lawsuits.
What's the name of the organization?
Judicial Watch.
Oh, okay, yeah. We're familiar with them.
Yeah, they're claiming they have a lot of success with this Freedom of Information Act lawsuits.
Well, they're probably getting a lot of success because they are lawyers, and they can get through a lot of this stuff a lot better than people coming into the courts because they don't pay attention to us at all. And it's a bigger battle for us to try to get information. But they do try to hide information even from other lawyers, so that happens too.
So. Okay, I yield. Good talking to you. Nice.
All right, thank you. Okay, we'll take our last caller. I only got a couple of minutes, Ross, but go ahead. Ross, you got the mic. Ross, you've been unmuted. Okay, I guess Ross walked away from his computer right now. So, all right, well, we've come to the end of our program, and we'll be back next Monday. See you then. Good night, everybody. Thanks for coming.